Hello, Rock and Roll Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. We are here this week to discuss one of my favorite artists of all time. Not just musically, but because I personally find them an inspiration for so many reasons. So, without further ado, we will be discussing the miracle of Joey Ramone, because honestly, if you know anything about his life, you'll understand why the U2 song was no misnomer, even if it was just about his musical impact and not the just courageous life that Joey led. Like, we'll get into it. It's ridiculous. But to start off with, I've got a quote by his brother, Mickey Lay, born Mitch Hyman, from his book, I Slept with Joey Ramone. And the quote is about Joey, and Mickey says, "He was the ultimate underdog who soared to a place far beyond mere overachievement. As low as he'd been, he never let it prevent him from setting his sights on astronomical heights. His brave plight was inspiring, as I intend his story should be." And that's the note for this whole episode, is I really would love to see people be as inspired to pursue their dreams in spite of the odds, like Joey did, as I used Joe Strummer as an example of kindness to inspire people to be kind and generous with my Kindness Calling episode. So this is another punk icon being used as an example. Obviously, Joey was not perfect, the same way that Joe was not perfect, but they set dang good examples on how to live your life in some pretty extraordinary ways that even though they did it by becoming famous, influential musicians, they're still nuggets of wisdom and good habits displayed that can be applied to anybody in any walk of life, whatever their aspirations may be. So, that started. We'll begin with the series of unfortunate events that was the life of Joey Ramone, which just makes his underdog story the coolest ever. Like, it moved me emotionally so much. So hopefully I don't cry, but it might happen, because it just is so inspiring. And I don't cry easily, so that put out there. So Joey, starting off, had things stacked against him before he was even born. Because he was born with a baseball-sized teratoma. Teratoma is a tumor that usually contains things like teeth and body tissue and bones. Marky Ramone described it as something similar to having like an undeveloped attached twin or parasitic twin. So he's born at 6 pounds, 4 ounces, including this baseball-sized tumor. So they wait a couple weeks to, you know, let him get used to being life outside the womb. And then they do surgery and remove the teratoma. My best friend, well, not my best friend, but one of my friends from college, is currently experiencing a pregnancy with her baby who has a teratoma. So this is a very still occurring condition issue. Very scary for her. I don't know if Charlotte knew that Joey had this before he was born, because I don't know how much they were ultrasounding people in the early 50s, but it had to be scary at the very least watching your newborn baby have, you know, surgery done on them before they're even a month old. But he survived the surgery. However, because this teratoma was growing on his spine, it can have effects. The effects on Joey's life, it could possibly have been a contributing factor for everything from his bad circulation and spina bifida, which he had, to his mental disabilities, which we'll get to. So, off the bat and out of the gate, Joey's fighting from day one, and he does not stop. Because, you know, like, there's no question, had he been in school in the current era, he would have been in the special needs classes. He did not do well in school, like, at all. Struggled a lot. both with the schoolwork and with the horrible treatment that he was getting and people not understanding, people being different. Like, from Mickey's book, it sounds like the mental issues started to show up more around puberty. I don't know the research on that. I did a lot of medical research for this thing. Who knew that researching rock stars would have you looking up what spina bifida is and, you know, what teratomas are? My Google search history is a weird mix right now, let me tell y'all. But anyway, so he's, you know, they become more of an issue as he's coming of age. And it affects his grades. What also doesn't help his grades is, picture it, Sicily! No, wait, Queens. Picture it, Queens, New York, 1960-something. An ungainly, tall, thin kid with a curved spine, most likely from the spina bifida, and or trying not to stand out and make himself look shorter, which he definitely was known to do, wearing glasses, challenged by academically, and with a growing case of OCD, and a name that, unfortunately, is Hymen, which is, you know, female anatomy. Like, everything about this man was just set up to make him the bully's number one target, which he kind of was. Like, you know, he relates it in some, you know, quotes by Joey about, like, how the bullies would carry chains and were, like, some really nasty people. Mickey talks about in his book his brother coming home with, you know, footprints in his back, and the weird dynamic that ended up growing up between Mickey and Joey, because here's your older brother and you're having to sort of stick up for him in fights because you're physically stronger than him by the time you're 16, because he's not the healthiest kid out there. And he still keeps going. He still ends up graduating, even though he, you know, struggles academically. He's not to be stopped. Oh, and on top of everything else that could contribute to Joey being bullied, there is his growing, like I said, his OCD, which manifests itself. It's weird. Normally when we think of OCD, we think of the people who have to, like, sort the M&Ms by color before they can eat them. We think of, like, the TV show Monk, basically, for those of you who watched it. That's our idea. But it can be the total opposite. Rather than a neat freak, people can be compulsed to not throw things away and not change their clothes. So there's a fairly good chance that when his OCD was acting up badly, Joey might not have smelled great. So, like I said, bullies, literally nature making him the prime prey for bullies with everything about this man head to toe. Speaking of head to toe, one of the effects of spina bifida is that you can have a lack of feeling in your lower extremities, so like your legs and your feet. And Joey walked around barefoot and got lots of foot infections, partly because he wasn't that clean and partly because he liked to walk around barefoot and couldn't feel when his foot got cut, and then it got infected and then he had to go to the hospital, which was an issue he had ongoing throughout his life, pretty much. I mean, he did try to really be like, oh, I need to take better care of myself and not do this and monitor it even though I can't feel it. So one of the many, you know, contributing factors to why the fact Joey did anything, the fact he got out of bed, you know, it was a small miracle, not to mention what he did accomplish with all of these things stacked against him, even before he went on to become a famous musician. Just the fact he was still in bands as a drummer and stuff in high school, you know, still participating relatively normally for everything he's got going on. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to be putting on the shoulders of a teenager. Not that teenagers don't already have enough stuff going on just when you're more neurotypical. So, Joey already, you know, not taking no for an answer, not backing down, still persevering in spite of the fact that his entire brain and body and everything are and the bullies are all out to get him, essentially. Which, incidentally, that was one of the issues he suffered from, was a sense of paranoia when they when he admitted himself to a mental hospital, which we'll get to, we'll discuss some of the things that they told him in the diagnosis. But as is, so he's survived school, mostly. But that's not where the bullying stopped, because even outside school and after graduation, everyone from his dad to his future bandmates still would either physically or verbally take it out on him, you know. And he still kept going. He even ended up having a decent relationship with his dad later in life, in spite of the fact that his dad once literally threw him across the room. I'm like, you've seen what Joey Ramone looks like. He looks like he could break in a high breeze. It is not the sort of, you know, build you should be throwing around like that. You know, you're gonna break your kid, Mr. Hyman. But, he still, and interestingly enough, from a psychiatrist who dated Joey's mom after, obviously, after she divorced Joey's dad, one of the voices that Joey could recognize of the voices in his head was that of his dad's, because he had a bunch of, like, negative voices, you know, that sort of wouldn't stop talking to him and telling him he'd done things wrong, hence why he'd have to go back and do it again. There's stories of him, you know, having to go back to the airport so he could step off the curb the right way. Like, there's a lot going on in that poor kid's head. Like, would not wish it on an enemy, much less my favorite, you know, front man, pretty much. And eventually, Joey's mental health concerns became safety concerns, both for Joey himself as well as them around him, those around him, because he's living at home, and, you know, the paranoia that he's experiencing and other things can make him lash out, occasionally violently, but also, you know, his brother, and probably his mother, too, I only know his brother's perspective from reading his brother's book about it, you know, had a concern that his brother might just end it all with everything going on in his head, which the fact that everything that's going on with Joey, and he didn't take that route, is an act of courage in of itself. Like, his bravery is all over, just fingerprints everywhere in his life of how much courage it took to just keep going and keep doing and never take no for an answer. As far as, like, what people are telling you you can't do because you're this way. Like, did not let his diagnoses define him. Because, for one, the first psychiatrist that Charlotte took Joey to go see told him that he was basically not going to be able to function in society whatsoever and would exist roughly at a vegetative, you know, level. That's just what you want to hear when you're 18 or 19 and about to take on the world, right? You know, that you won't be able to do anything remotely normal with your life. I sincerely hope that that psychiatrist at one time heard, I've gone mental, and listened to Joey, now with a record deal and several albums under his belt, singing, I am a vegetable. Just hope that, you know, he heard that song and felt really foolish. So yeah, like, there's a huge amount of just courage to not take the easy way out, not just take a diagnosis as the definition of your life, and be like, okay, well, I'm this way, so I can't do anything, and I'll just quit. I don't think Joey Ramone knew how to quit, because he certainly never did in his life. Not this, not even later on. Because that wasn't the end of it. He did another really courageous act. So here he is. He's not quite 20 yet when he does this. But on his own, he takes the subway down to St. Vincent's Mental Hospital and checks himself in all by himself. And this is the early 70s. Maybe even it's only 69. The late 60s, early 70s. And he's got the baseball-sized cojones to take his mental health seriously in a time where that's not even talked about, much less considered cool or manly, to just go and be like, hey, I'm not mentally well, and I need help. Like, people forget there's a lot of courage to admit that you need help. it's not an easy thing to do. It's not something most of us want to do. And the fact that Joey had the guts to take his life into his own hands and be like, listen, I don't like what I'm doing. I don't like how I'm treating my family. I don't like what it's like living in my skull. So I'm going to try and get help. And he didn't even just take, like, well, one psychiatrist told me something I didn't like, so that's it. I'm never getting help again. Because, like I said, they didn't take the diagnosis from the one dude seriously, but he still went back to seek help again at the, mental hospital. So, like, not taking no for an answer, not taking a diagnosis as a definition of his life, and not taking it out on the whole medical profession that he received some advice that he didn't like or didn't agree with or didn't think was going to define him, at least. You know, still seeking how to live as full of a life as possible with all this stuff going on. And the people at St. Vincent's were like, yeah, he should probably stay here. But he didn't. He went and did outpatient. But he didn't, you know, take up residence in spite of their suggestions that he did. And they told him that he, you know, that you can find a copy online. I know it's in the Gabba Gabba Hey graphic novel of the Ramones. There's a picture of the letter that they wrote for Joey and his family about, you know, like, all of his conditions and their recommendations. And they're basically like, low self-esteem, paranoia, schizophrenia, you know, totally things that anybody wants to deal with. Not at all. So, but Joey keeps going. Like, the man's the Energizer Bunny of courage and just not taking anything laying down. Like, blows my mind every time I think about him. That he's got all this going on, and he's only 20 at this point. He's 20 years old, and he's already got all this crushing weight on him, and he's not letting it slow him down or flatten him at all. Because he still goes and makes and sells plastic flowers, so sort of small business entrepreneur. Ends up working at his mom's art gallery, because his mom sort of sets him up to live in the basement of her art gallery for her own, you know, mental health as well as his. Because, I mean, Charlotte Lesher, Joey's mother, was just probably one of the coolest mothers I've ever read about. The fact that she had as much patience and endurance and understanding as she did in a time where, you know, they didn't even have a name for OCD yet. Like I said, the diagnosis they gave him was, like, schizophrenia and paranoia. They didn't really have, like, obsessive compulsive disorder as a thing, as a named problem yet. Let me just say, side note here, knowing what I know about Joey's OCD, it now irritates me when other people are just sort of like, oh, you know, that's so OCD because you organize your socks by color or something fairly mundane like that, where it's just a preference you have rather than an actual mental compulsion where you will not be able to sleep at night if you don't get it just right. Like Joey had. So I'm just sort of like, I have a whole new respect for the actual disorder, not just people bandying it about as, like, a term to say neat freak, basically, because as Joey exhibits, it isn't always being a neat freak. Joey couldn't throw things away. He had difficulties, you know, changing his clothes and laundering them. Like, once he wore an outfit, it was going to be worn until he wore it off of his body. The ripped jeans weren't just the look. It also had to do with him not changing his clothes until they literally, like, were no longer going to be able to be wearable and were ceasing to, you know, serve their purpose. I mean, that's quotes by Monty Melnick, their road manager, about that, and other people as well. So there's evidence that it was that severe. So OCD is a lot more serious than you talk about it being now that it's a commonly heard term. It can be really serious, and Joey had it really seriously. So he's dealing with all this at, you know, the beginning of life, basically. You know, he's 20. He should be out, like, in college, or not in college, but at least, you know, hanging out and not having to worry about whether or not he touched doorknobs correctly. Most people aren't worried about anything other than having fun in their 20s. Sadly, Joey had a big much bigger load on his plate than the rest of us. Or not the rest of us, but the more neurotypical percent of us. But he's still not backing down. Like I said, he sells flowers, plastic flowers that he makes, works at his mom's art gallery, so, like, he's still doing stuff. Even though he hasn't, like, found his true calling yet, he's still doing his best to function in society, even though he's been told he won't be able to. Not letting the diagnosis define him. It's like there's a girl in my hometown who's special needs, but she has a baking business in the back of her mom's store. She sells baked goods that she makes herself, and they're really good. She's doing something. She's not just taking the, well, they've told me I have all these things wrong with me, so I shouldn't have to do anything route, or I have a, it's not even an excuse, it's a dang good reason at times to just give up for the most part. They're not giving up. Neither Joey did, nor is the girl from my hometown, and it's just so inspiring to see somebody with that much stacked against them not giving up while there's loads of more neurotypical, less damaged people who give up for much less reasons. So it's just, it's convicting and inspiring and really moving. But yeah, so like I said, he continues to pursue music. He has played drums in high school bands, also knows how to play accordion, and is taking a stab at songwriting with his brother's, old guitar that, Mickey was getting rid of. So he keeps coming back to it, and now that Lamb is big, and the patron saint of all misfits and weirdos, Mr. David Bowie, is a huge influence on Joey, because, like, there's no rules about what you have to look like in order to be cool in David Bowie's world. You can be as strange as you please, as unnormal as, you are, and it's okay. So, Joey has found his niche genre, and joins a glam band called Sniper, which I really wish there was photographic evidence of this, because Joey Ramone, who we all pretty much know what he looks like, I'm just trying to imagine him in a skin-tight black jumpsuit with platform lavender boots in his mother's makeup and accessories singing in a band. Because that's a mental image that I don't quite know how to grapple with, and I was like, I need actual photo evidence of this. I mean, for one, the platform boots made him almost 7 foot, so that alone is just ridiculous. And then the fact that they're lavender, I'm like, I really want photographic evidence of Sniper Joey in color, because there is like one clip that just showed up on YouTube of him and Sniper singing. The video quality and the sound quality are pretty poor, and it's in black and white, and I was like, no, this is so close to what I needed, but it's not what I needed. But it's still very interesting seeing an early Joey singing, in a band, rather than being the drummer, which was his former role in most bands. Which, this was part of the shocking thing for Mickey, was seeing his brother doing something where he seemed comfortable in himself. I mean, Joey didn't fit in anywhere physically or socially as he was. So for, Mickey, it was a huge revelation, and I'm sure anybody else who knew Joey, seeing Joey being at ease, especially when it's in front of an audience, in a spotlight, singing, and especially when Joey's voice, I mean, he doesn't have, like, a conventionally appealing voice, or a way you want to put it. Like, he's not Sinatra, he's not Don Henley, it's not normal sounding, I guess, what you say. It's not what you think of when you think, like, the top five greatest vocalists of all time. Usually Joey doesn't make that list. Frontman, possibly, but, just vocal quality. So, like, he's not conventional looking or singing in a conventionally, pleasant way. But he's totally at ease and comfortable, as much as he could be, singing up front in front of a bunch of people, which is not something most people, neurotypical or not, are comfortable doing. They're like, okay, people are looking at me and I'm uncomfortable now, but Joey found his home under a white-hot spotlight, which is just crazy. Also, side note here, the bullying has not stopped because, well, Joey looks like Joey, and then you dress him up in the getup I just described and stick him on a street corner to go hitchhiking to get where he needs to go, and, well, you can imagine what's happening in 1970s New York with a 7-foot dude in platform boots in his mother's makeup and accessories. Yeah, so bullying is still part of Joey's life. It doesn't really go away. Definitely not until after he's become well and famous, and then it's just, you know, people like his bandmates sort of causing misery in his life. So he's still trucking, still hitchhiking in questionable safety attire. Just like, put some jeans and a t-shirt on before you hitchhike. But it goes back to his compulsions. Once he had an outfit on, he really didn't want to, you know, change out of it. It was a difficult thing for him to do because of his OCD. So there he is, singing in Sniper, and then he gets fired because he's not pretty enough to be in a glam band. This is something that will come up again because Johnny, when he is in the Ramones and they're sort of rearranging the lineup as far as who's playing what and doing what, Johnny doesn't want Joey to sing lead because he thinks they need like a attractive, handsome Robert Plant, Roger Daltrey kind of individual as a frontman, not the vaguely alien looking, as somebody described him, benign eldritch being Joey Ramone. Not who Johnny doesn't think that's pretty enough to be the lead singer. Again, they're not even in a glam band, and Joey still is getting flack for not being pretty enough. Fortunately, Dee Dee and Tommy, the real sort of founder of the band, disagreed and outvoted Johnny, and so Joey moved up to lead singer because Dee Dee couldn't sing and play bass at the same time at that time. So it all worked out in the end. But let's just take a minute here before we jump into, like, life in the Ramones and all the cool stuff he accomplished then, because for one, that's a little bit more well known. But you've got Joey in his early 20s. He's got about 50,000 excuses and 20 dang good reasons to have given up and quit by now. I mean, he could have easily taken the easy, logical, conventional route and been like, okay, I have special needs and issues. I'm going to take my diagnosis and let it, you know, be something that impacts my decision making. And therefore, I'm just going to do the easy thing and continue to work at my mom's art gallery and live in the basement of the art gallery and just live out as modest of an existence as I can and just call it good. And no one would have judged him. They probably still would have been impressed that he was working a normal job with all the things he had going on. So, like, he could have taken a still honorable, easy way out and lost no credit or respect. But no, he's like, I'm going for all the marbles and I'm going to have the life that I want doing the things that make me, you know, give me joy. What everybody else says about me be damned. You know, what the doctors have said, what anybody says, like, I'm gonna do what I feel passionate about, or die trying kind of attitude. Which is just mind-boggling, if you think about it. I mean, that kind of grit and determination from somebody who's not even 25 yet. It's just, like I said, this is why Joey inspires me so much, because he just keeps going, and just ends up becoming, I mean, let's establish the fact here. The Ramones invented punk. They came before the Sex Pistols. Punk started in America. Britain got a hold of it a little bit after us, but the Ramones are the first punk band. In fact, I think, and because of that, they're hugely influential, to the point that I think Spin Magazine rated them as the second most influential band behind the Beatles. The Ramones changed everything. You can still hear the fingerprints of their influence on indie music to this day, and their first album was not too far from 50 years ago. It's over 45 years ago. And they are still having an impact musically. They set a template that is all over the place in any sort of branch of rock to this day. I mean, for one, they influenced speed metal. Not only that, but they influenced indie, punk. Obviously, they invented punk. And a decent portion of that, like, songwriting, most of the songs, unless they're written by the whole band, were written by either Dee Dee or Joey. Johnny didn't write a lot by himself. Tommy wrote a few songs, but Tommy was only on the first three albums. He has an over 20-year-long career in the Ramones alone. Over 2,000 concerts in the Ramones alone. And like I said, the music of the Ramones still can be heard to this day as far as its influence in current music, so long as it's, you know, actual music with guitar, bass, drums, normal rock and roll template. I'm not talking hip-hop and things like that, but if I listen to it more, I could probably find a Ramones influence there, even. There's a reason Spin Magazine put them second only to the Beatles. The Ramones' influence is insanely widespread. And this is coming from a very... challenge isn't even quite the right word, but he had a lot of challenges in his life, so challenge sort of works. Individual who's a huge part of this. He's the front man, so he's kind of the face of the band. He writes a decent portion of the songs. And that is just so crazy, because, I mean, he didn't give up when a lot of people with a lot less problems would have given up. They would have just been like, this isn't worth it. I mean, especially after the record sales that the Ramones had, because they never really had that top 40 hit that they wanted as 45s went, and their albums never really sold, you know, astronomically well either. They never, you know, were outselling the Eagles or something. And they still kept going. Like, I think that may be one of the things that they shared, especially, you know, like Dee Dee, Johnny, and Joey, was just the tenacity to keep going. And here's Joey with all of his issues, who also gets, you know, crap from his bandmates to this, you know, throughout their career. And he still keeps going, which is something Tommy, who is, you know, was more neurotypical, couldn't do. Life on the road was literally making Tommy Barry to have a mental breakdown, which is why he quit the band. I mean, he still produced their albums and did stuff, you know, help them out musically, but he had to quit because they were literally going to send him to an insane asylum, as he put it, because he was losing it from all the pressures and the negative way they treated each other and the way he was being treated and having the other bandmates pitted against him, or, you know, them pitting them against each other, and, you know, the whole just giant bowl of drama that was the Ramones, because let's be real, they're, as far as drama in bands go, the Ramones are pretty high up there, especially as bands who had a crap load of drama and still kept going and didn't let the drama break up the band. I mean, the band didn't break up because Johnny stole Joey's serious girlfriend who he was going to propose to. They retired like 10 years after that incident, if not longer. So, like, nothing was getting in their way, personal feelings and dislikes and prejudices aside, they were going to keep going. So, like, Joey's keep going attitude was in the other band members too. They just didn't have quite as much going wrong in their lives as he did. I mean, not that Dee Dee's life is a picnic. Dee Dee had some definite issues too. I mean, they all did. They there's a reason so many of their songs are about being mentally unwell. They're like a whole soup of, you know, disorders, complexes, and other, you know, mental health concerns. It could be put under observation for anybody writing a thesis for, you know, their psychology major. But yeah, so here they are, persevering in spite of everything, through declining music, betrayal, heartbreak, no real successful singles. And I mean, Joey takes his music so seriously that he quit smoking, which, I mean, as Mickey puts it, was a huge sort of thing to be able to do when he's with his, obsessive compulsive disorder. Because, quitting something that you do as a habit, a soothing habit, especially because even neurotypical people use smoking as a soothing habit thing to do to relieve stress. And Joey's like, okay, this is hurting my voice, so I'm going to quit. Cold turkey. All at once. Just, I mean, that's kind of crazy. Most people have a definite ongoing struggle with quitting smoking. I mean, my grandfather didn't, but that's because he was literally getting emphysema and coughing up blood and decided that he didn't want to die at 50. But here's Joey doing it at like 22, maybe a little bit later than that. But whole lot of, and he wasn't just smoking a little bit, like his fingers were yellowed from it, as Mickey described it. So another inspiring thing. Like, I'm inspired by anybody who can quit a like addictive habit that they're stuck on, which Joey got off drugs and got clean later in life. He hadn't really been on them super other than like, smoking some weed and stuff and possibly sniffing some glue, but he wasn't like, on them, the harder stuff younger. But like, I guess like in the 80s he got into cocaine, and I don't know if he did heroin much, but stuff like that, and then got out of it, cleaned up, even stopped drinking alcohol for a while, which is really impressive from anybody. I respect the heck out of anybody who quits bad habits, much less somebody who's got a mental disorder that makes them really attached to their habits. So it's just, like I said, there's so much that Joey did to overcome, same as the band did, because I mean, the band had to overcome punk being either associated more with other bands and sort of getting overlooked, even though you invented the genre, and also the negative press that bands like the Sex Pistols and then the whole punk scene of, safety pins and all that was giving punk in America, especially after that 60 Minutes special that I think I discussed some of this last in last week's episode, where it's like it gave a negative rap that hurt their record sales. But they didn't quit, and they didn't change. They didn't stop doing the music that they had started doing and set out to do. They're like, we're gonna do what we wanna do, and the rest of it be damned. Which is, kind of Joey's thing. He kept going, didn't quit. And just he goes through all this, and then we get to the early 90s. I think it's like 1994, maybe 93. It's before the Ramones retired. And he gets diagnosed with cancer. I believe it was I'm trying to remember, like lymphoma in like his bone marrow. So he gets treatment. They catch it mostly in time. Everything seems to be fine. And it is. For a while. And then one day his chiropractor comes to make a call at Joey's house, and Joey doesn't answer the buzzer, which is weird. So he gets up there, he calls Joey's mother, gets the combo for the lock on the door, and Joey is laying on the floor face down with blood coming out of his mouth and has been there somewhere anywhere between 24 and 48 hours. So at least a day, up to 2 days, laying unconscious on his apartment floor, bleeding. Charming, right? So they get him medical attention, and the doctor that was in charge of Joey's cancer treatments is like, if you hadn't found him, if you had found him a half hour later, he would have been dead. So narrowly escapes death. Is this going to stop Joey Ramone? Of course not. He's still, planning his solo album from, recovery. Starts doing chemo, which just knocks the crap out of him. By the descriptions of what quotes of Joey said, and, you know, them being quoted in Mickey's book, just knocks the ever-loving crap out of him. Like, I mean, he's always been a weak kid. You can tell that just by looking at him. He's not a strong physical specimen. He's not Robert Plant or Roger Taylor. He's Joey Ramone. And he still, you know, perseveres, goes through, you know, the physically exhausting cancer treatments, and is still planning his solo album and participating in the music scene in New York and living his life. Like, his determination to live life to the fullest, like, in the positive way, not the I'm gonna go do everything and if I die at 25, that's fine. Like, Joey wasn't living his life to the fullest in the self-destructive sense. He was, you know, trying to do as best as he could, pretty much from what you read about him, to live as long as he could. I mean, the fact that he made it to almost 50 with everything he had going on kind of proves that he was out to take care of himself. Like I said, you know, he got sober, quit drugs, was taking vitamins, you know, like, once he had, you know, and that's from an interview in 91. So that would have been, like, before he even knew he had cancer. So he's just deciding to live a cleaner life, to live a longer, better life. So he's really living life to the fullest, even before he gets the cancer, after he gets the cancer, after he starts the chemotherapy. He's still doing as much as life will let him, and probably a little more than, you know, people would think that life should be allowing him to at that point. Which is just a really inspiring way to live your life. When you're just like, I'm going to do as much as I can, as much good as I can for myself and for others, for as long as I can, and I'm not going to be self-destructive about it. I'm not going to, like, sacrifice, you know, my health to, like, prove a point. I try to take care of myself so I can take care of others and also having a good life. Because, I mean, Joey, his ex-girlfriend, well, I can't remember what her name was, but anyways, she had a daughter, not his, but he was very involved in that daughter, whose name was Raven's, life. Angela, I think, was the girlfriend's name. So Angela, his serious girlfriend of several years, who broke up with him, you know, because it is, Joey's disorders did not make him easy to live with, understandably so, for the people around him. His own mother struggled living with him, so as much as I'd like to imagine being Joey's girlfriend probably wasn't an easy job. So, you know, she broke up with him, but they maintained friends, and she made Joey the godfather to her daughter Raven, and he was very participating in that little girl's life. Like, it was sort of, Angela put it, you know, it was the closest he was sort of ever going to get to having a child of his own. She said it that, you know, like, because he couldn't have children. I don't know if he physically couldn't or if it was simply a matter of he was not going to put himself in that situation with everything he already had on his plate, which is understandable. I could see why, you know, especially with the occasional outbursts of violence. He'd been hit as a kid. Doesn't come off the sort who'd want to accidentally hit his own kids, so maybe best not have kids, because they don't understand what's going on the way adults can. So, anyways, that side note. So, like, he's still living in some of those kinds of relationships as much as he could find in the decisions that he made on how to live his life, which is really cool. And you hear him in interviews, even in his 40s, and he's still sort of like, yeah, you know, like, if people bring up, like, you got any plans on getting married, and he's sort of like, yeah, I'd like, you know, it'd be nice to find somebody, you know, that kind of thing. So he isn't giving up on his life or giving up on finding something that will work for him in spite of heartbreak, in spite of mental disability, in spite of everything that has went wrong in his life, which is what we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes, however long I've been talking. Still just persevering and hopeful and not quitting and not whining and not being like, well, yeah, but I can't find anybody who'll put up with me, you know, because of my mental problems. No, he's just like, yeah, maybe I'll find somebody. It's so encouraging. So, yeah, like I said, he starts the, you know, chemotherapy, but still making plans for his life. But unfortunately, life has other plans for Zoe Ramone, because his brain still won't leave him alone. There was a while that he was taking medicine for it, and it was helping, but it was curbing his creativity. So Joey, for better or worse, chose that being creatively active and being able to write songs was more important than being able to control his compulsions. So that decision was made. And I don't know exactly at what time in his life that happened, you know, when he went on or off the medicine, but definitely before 2000. Because on New Year's Eve in 2000, his brain told him he had to go walk back across town to the chiropractor's office, the same chiropractor who saved his life, incidentally, and touch a knob or switch or a doorknob or something the right way. So he did. He walked back to his apartment. Now bear in mind, it is New Year's Eve in New York City. So the weather kind of sucks. Slippery, icy, snowy. But he makes it back to his apartment safe. Except for his brain won't leave him alone. And he's like, you need to go back and make sure you did it right. Again. So he sets back across town again to do whatever it was that his brain needed him to do. And he slips and falls. He's been undergoing cancer treatment. So guess what? His bones are weak from that and all the other medication he has to take for cancer treatment and everything else he's got going on, spina bifida, that he's had his whole life. So he breaks his hips. And he's actually laying there for a little while before anybody notices, because it's New Year's Eve. They just think he's some drunk dude who fell over in the snow. So this, you know, female police officer comes by, gets EMS, gets him to the hospital. And they're like, okay, you need hip replacement surgery. Which is fine. If you're not on cancer treatment, which he had to come off of. So they fix his hips. But his cancer comes back. And it doesn't go away this time. It was, like, almost in remission before this incident. Which is why it's so frustrating, because I'm like, Joey, your own head got you killed, essentially. Like, if he hadn't walked back across town, he would not have fallen and broken his hips. Which means he would not have come off of cancer medication and treatment. Which means he might have more than likely survived, because the cancer was almost going away before this happened. So, that's, like I said, that's New Year's Eve, 2000, he falls. Obviously, for those of you who know the dates, it's in April of 2001 that he dies. So he only makes it, like, another 4.5 months. Ends up dying, like, a month shy of his 50th birthday. Which just, I mean, the fact that he made it that long, with as much stuff as he had going on, is inspiring, even if it does make me really sad that in spite of putting up the good fight literally from the day he came into the world, he was taken from us way the hell too soon. I mean, he should still be around complaining about how bad modern music sucks. Maybe that's why he got taken when he did, because he might not have been able to survive seeing what music has turned into. He thought the late 90s and early 2000s were bad. You don't want to see what pop music looks like these days, sir. Talk about generic and commercial. But yeah, so like, all that. And it's not just like the fact that he survived. He thrived. Not just professionally, by being in a successful rock band that had a massive influence, but there's this really good quote from an interview he did in 1991, which you can find on YouTube. It's about a half hour long. It's between 20 and 30 minutes long. And it's really good, but the part at the end just gets me, because there's this quote, which Joey said other similar type things, in more well-known quotes, but this quote is my favorite, in which he said, "I'm true to myself. I'm just me, and I like to experience everything. to me, that's what keeps you intact. I mean, I'm experienced. I went through my drug phase. I went through my partying phase. And I don't find myself a boring person because I'm not running around. Let's party, man. Let's get high. I am high on life. I really enjoy my life. And he goes on to talk about how he enjoys spending time with, you know, the people he cares about. And, I mean, to have that kind of positive view of your own life and inner confidence of, like, I like who I am, when, especially when you've got voices in your head telling you that you shouldn't, you know, like, all that negative, the negative voices in his mind, because they were all negative, like, you read about it in Mickey's book. The voices in Joey's head were not saying nice things. They weren't positive pep talking him. And he's still overcoming external and internal hardship and keeping an upbeat attitude. And I mean, I love the line of I'm high on life. It gave me chills when I first heard it, because I used to say that all the time in college, because people would be like, how can you be so happy? What are you on, and can I have some? And I'm like, I am high on life. I'm sorry you don't enjoy being alive. Part of me wishes I could get some of that juice that I was on, and it of, you know, not that I was on anything other than general positivity and excitement of being in college, but I want to go back to when I was 17 and first went to college, but like, yeah, I need some of that attitude now that I'm 29, because it's hard to hold on to. But here's Joey in 1991, so he's 40, holding on to that in spite of everything, which just makes him so inspiring. Like, he went through so many challenges and overcame them and kept a positive attitude. Like I said, he wasn't perfect. He wasn't constantly always the Easter Bunny and Christmas wrapped into a package and could be vindictive and do bad things. But everybody does. I mean, to me, if somebody's constantly a Julie Andrews type level happy, it's almost a little weird, and I don't trust it as much as I do somebody who does have bad days. Imperfection makes a person relatable. And Joey had a lot of imperfection, but still persevered, overcame, kept a positive attitude, you know, on the good days. And it's just, to me, it challenges me, because I have so many less things going wrong in my life than he did. Challenges me to, like, try to live like Joey on his best days, and not let what other people say about me or the situation I'm in my life define me. And I feel like that's a good takeaway for anybody, is to just be like, I'm gonna, you know, use this very complex individual as a source of inspiration to keep going, keep persevering, pursue what I'm passionate about, and, you know, maybe try and change the world. Joey and the Ramones did. And they were all some really screwed up individuals. So, like, just because you're screwed up doesn't mean you can't have a positive influence. Everybody's screwed up. So every positive influence in the world has come from some semi-screwed up individuals doing the right thing and persevering in that. So, like, on that note, I guess, I'll just close it out, and you can take the example of Joey's courageous life and, you know, be inspired about it in whatever part of your life you need inspiration in, because Joey is a wellspring of inspiration to just, you know, live life to the fullest in the good way, not the self-destructive way, and to be high on life and enjoy your life and be true to yourself and, you know, like who you are. So on that note, just be kind to each other and yourself, and rock on to the Ramones, or not to the Ramones, but you should totally listen to the Ramones. And I will be back next week, probably with something a little less serious, deep, and personal, and back to a more musical topic, but I do like to share the inspiration that music and musicians have given me to y'all at times. So, peace out, rock on, and I will be back next week.